Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Okay, so what kind of person are you when you are on a tour? And I mean, like, you have gathered with a group of people and you're listening to a tour guide.
Oh, I feel like having done so many tours with students, I feel like I'm the one that has to be, like, the engaged one all the time. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. I have to be the one asking questions because middle school students are very shy and awkward and mm-hmm. don't know how to talk to adults outside right. of their sphere.
Right.
So I feel like I'm the facilitator if we're giving my Enneagram to you.
Yes, yes. Okay. Engager, facilitator.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I feel like,
pleaser.
You know,
yeah.
What else is new? Please give me the gold star. Uh-huh. But I feel like that is something that I do, like, on tours now, too. I'm also, like, it's out of curiosity. Just being a teacher, I don't want to have this person, like, flounder and, like, be like, does anybody have any questions? I'm like, oh, I'm going to ask a question because sure. I know what it's like to do that and, like, have everybody just blankly stare at you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool, I'm glad you were all listening.
Right.
So I am an empathetic tour taker.
I see.
Yeah, what about you?
I mean, as someone who also comes from teaching, I mean, tour guiding is teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's a form,
yeah.
You know? I have to actively go, this is not a time or a space for you to be judgmental of someone else's teaching style.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm always like, we could have saved this. We didn't need this piece of information now. We could have saved it for later. We have
Where's
the hook? We have so many questions that are coming up about this one thing. Like, now would be a great time to really, like, sit in it and ask questions about it. You know what I mean? Like, we're not acknowledging it. Like, it's hard to not have notes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just who I am. And so it's a great moment for me to go, you get to just participate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can participate in a way that is supportive of this person, right?
Yeah.
Tours, I mean, we even talked about this with Emily and Megan recently
mm-hmm.
on the trail mix with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like tactics for engagement from tour guides, it's like I would love to give a, like, whole TED Talk, not just TED Talk, but, like, a workshop, a professional development workshop on just, like, things we can do differently on tours
mm-hmm.
that have been done historically forever that just no longer really serve anybody.
Sure.
Right? Like, asking questions you already know the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does anyone know who was the vice president of the chamber in 1952? Of course not, because we aren't you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, of course nobody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I get really frustrated and then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm tuned out. I'm just going to read now. You know what I mean? Like,
so we've come to this cold open with criticism.
We have.
Meanwhile, I'm just watching yep. people tap dance and I'm like, it's okay, baby. We can make it.
I can't. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I've got criticisms, but I say that because I like to be on tours and I mm-hmm. like to learn because I am curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also like, and we can also elevate.
Sure. Grow from love.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. At the national park. At the national park. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking in Indiana Dunes National Park that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Kickapoo, Peoria, Kaskaskia, Potawatomi, and Miamia people.
Okay, so we finished the last episode. We had just finished up the Three Dune Challenge.
Right, in the state park at Indiana Dunes.
That's right, yep. Indiana Dunes State Park, which mm-hmm. is nestled inside of mm-hmm. Indiana Dunes mm-hmm. National Park.
Yes.
And obviously, upon visit, visit all of the Indiana Dunes
Absolutely.
State Park and National Park.
Yes.
But because we are gluttons for punishment, we decided that we wanted to do not one, not two, but three more things this day.
Don't care how, I want it now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're just sort of like, okay, we got time. Let's go.
Well, it was only like 11 o'clock.
But we had done a lot.
We had done a lot.
I think most folks after doing 9, 10, and 2, then the Three Dune Challenge would be like, I'm turning in.
No, not us.
Right?
Not us.
No. However, we didn't exactly know what our plan was going to be.
No.
So we knew that Mount Baldy was a thing that we yep. were interested in, but we didn't exactly know how that was going to play into our day. So we decided to take our moment and go to
the visitor center because we wanted our patches and our badges, and you wanted to look at t-shirts because what else
have
is
our visitor center moment, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Our visitor center moment, I do say over the years, has gotten a little bit longer than it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be Mike would time me and he mm-hmm. would have a little like stopwatch yep. and he would say you have 30 seconds mm-hmm. to go in and out
yep.
and if you don't then I'm leaving you here mm-hmm. in the car
in the car
abandonment
yep
so yes
who's having some issues now. So we drive over to the visitor center, and it's a lovely little visitor center. It looks like it was designed by the same folks who designed most of the quote-unquote new public schools of the late 90s. It was brick and cinder block. It had a green metal roof. There was a half-cylinder dome entryway, probably called a breezeway.
Because that is... all schools, I feel like, have a breezeway, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that a term that I always hear at a school?
Houses have breezeways, too.
No. I've never yes. heard of someone say it's in the breezeway.
Hmm. Well, if you have like a space, like an overhang that goes between your house and your garage, that's considered a breezeway.
Stop.
It is. That is an architectural term. It's not just okay. for schools or public buildings.
Please comment and let us know, everybody, if you have a home with a space that you regularly call breezeway.
Well, I mean, you know, some people do.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I have
like you were disagreeing with
only
me.
Heard that term in like public school, maybe church, maybe business architecture settings. Mm-hmm. So there we go.
Yeah.
We do take a moment to stroll through the visitor center. It had a ton of interpretive information inside, mm-hmm. including there was a little bit about the little brown bat. And there they had a little brown bat mm-hmm. is its name. And they had a taxidermied little brown bat underneath a glass case. mm-hmm. All your dreams coming true yep. in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it kind of makes sense that the architecture here is like so evocative of a school because this is actually a proper education center. It's mm-hmm. got a lot of rooms. It's got a lot of meeting rooms, a lot of halls, exhibit halls.
A lot of breezeways.
A lot of breezeways. Mm-hmm. And like great architecture for it because like there's like cathedraled wooden ceilings and things are hanging and they've got a lovely visitor center here.
Mm-hmm. After taking some time, more than 30 seconds and walking around the visitor center, we got our merch, we buy our patches, and this section is definitely very small. We were there still during COVID protocols being in place, so it was like only 3 people allowed in the visitor center at a time kind of thing. So we did what we needed to in the store. While we were at the visitor center, we chatted with park ranger named Joseph, and he suggested a couple of things that we hadn't earmarked at this point for the park. And first of those was the Bailey Homestead. They had a ranger ranger guided tour in the afternoon. And while we don't always do these, we had time and some extra curiosity this day. So we planned for it and we were thrilled.
The ranger also mentioned a trail nearby the Bailey homestead called the Cowles Bog Trail. Okay. Admittedly, we've been referring to this as the Bog Trail in our research and in our preparation for this episode. It could also be pronounced the Cowles Bog Trail. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, if you return your Amazon packages there, you get some Cowles cash.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there it is.
Not a sponsor, but could be.
So Joseph had mentioned that it was a flat trail and that it went through some wetlands. Which we were like, great. Yes,
more wetlands.
Biodiversity. Mm-hmm. Perfect to add to our day. Yep. It's also flat. That'll be a nice addition. Mm-hmm. Also, interesting little piece of information. Indiana Sand Dunes National Park and State Park is one of the most biodiverse spots in the entire MPS.
Oh, things I'm just learning right now. Yeah. The ranger also suggested that this trail would be short enough that we could get to it before the timed tour, which was a little bit of a race the clock moment for us.
We knew it would be.
Yeah. So we departed, and on our way out, we noticed some enormous murals that were outside of the visitor center. The images were a mix of animals and splashes of color and a little bit of artistic chaos. They were super, super cool. There was also, I believe, like a buffalo outside the main entrance. There are some cities that have like an animal mascot. Like I've seen this in Baltimore before, where the city will like commission artists to paint these crabs. Baltimore is known for its crabbing, and they'll paint them like in a muralistic style, and so they'll plant them all over the city. So I feel like this buffalo sort of had that kind of feel to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all of the murals that were out there were by an artist who is known as RC, A-R-C-Y, or Ryan Christensen. And there's actually murals like that of other animals in other national parks and other natural spaces in the U.S., in the U.K., and also in Australia.
In Australia.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The ones that I remember, definitely there was a fox, there was a bison, and a rainbow trout. So we took these in for a minute, and then we got in the car and headed toward the Cowles Bog Trail.
So it wasn't a far drive to the trailhead of the Bog Trail from the visitor center. We parked at the Greenbelt Trailhead.
So pulling in here kind of felt like Mississippi for me because the ground was flat. There were giant power lines stretching over flat fields. And also like marshland, it was quite Mississippi.
We were like right by the train tracks, if I remember correctly, when we parked. And was there a ranger that was there right when we got there?
Yes, there was a ranger sort of sitting.
Yeah, to like, kind of like check your pass, essentially. Yeah, So there weren't too many cars parked here in this parking area. We just geared up as soon as we could, just because our time was short, and we set off on this trail.
So the Cowles Bog Trail can be as long as a 4.7 mile loop, but we were making it shorter because of time, because of this tour we wanted to do, and we were going to do a 3.5 mile loop. The trail is laid out like the shape of the number 8, with two different trails from two different spots that sort of would bring one to the bottom loop of the 8. And so we were taking the one from the Greenbelt Trailhead, walking out to the 8, and then we were just going to do a loop around the bottom circle of the 8, and then come right back.
Based on the time that we needed to arrive for the tour of the Bailey homestead, we knew we were going to have to keep a solid pace on this trail. So this was like, it's rare that we've encountered a trail, I would say, in our all of our journeyings, where it's like we had a specific timeline where it was like, we got a dip. Obviously, if we're hiking in one park and then leaving for another park that day, typically we're like, we would like to leave at this time because the drive time. But this was like a, we firmly should be done by this time because it's going to take us this time to drive over to the Bailey and then go from there. So we had to be very mindful of that.
So when we started the trail, it was kind of like a dirt path through a field. And at the very beginning, kind of almost felt like a dirt road with giant industrial power line structures to the left and fences around. And then there were also wetlands in the distance over to the right. I remember us talking at the time, we were like, these power lines are huge.
Yeah, they were.
And we were like,
there was water on that side too.
Yeah.
The structure was into the sediment of the water, riverbed, lake
and
bed,
so what we were you. We talked a lot about, like, I wonder if that power is being used to power Chicago.
Yeah.
And because Chicago is not literally, you can see it from Indiana Dunes. Mm-hmm.
After getting to the end of this dirt path, dirt road, which is not the most scenic of areas, that's for sure, we head right. So the trail basically curves us to the right. And the fence also changes at this moment in time. And this is where we come across some interpretive signage. So the sign shared that the bog was called the Cowles Bog and the Great Marsh, which is what the greater area is called. And it was formed thousands of years ago when Lake Michigan's water receded, which left these wetlands in place. Currently, the NPS is working on restoring these wetlands, removing invasive species like hybrid cattails and replacing them with other native species. And honestly, this is a really beautiful view across these vast green wetlands at this point.
So we continue on. We now pass what looks to be, well, it was an older gentleman and a younger gentleman, and we theorize that they sort of looked like father and son, but
But were they?
Well, I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. But we can't assume anything. Mm-mm. They did both sort of smell like they had partaken of some... They had had a bit of an herbal refreshment.
Thank you, Ty. Uh-huh.
Shut up. You guys got coke here? In the woods, because we're headed into some woods now. Mm-hmm. Would you enjoy herbal refreshment with your parents? I feel like your parents have asked that of you before.
Ask what of me?
To
supply
join
them,
in partaking of herbal refreshment.
No.
They haven't?
No.
Oh, I thought they did.
No. Mm. No, they've talked about their own experiences with it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no.
Yeah.
What about your parents?
Well, my mom...
herbal refreshment. That is what I did.
My mom, she has had some in the form of consumables. Mm-hmm.
And I love how delicate this whole conversation
right,
is.
And yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, we, I think, you know, I certainly had given her some once.
Sure.
Because she was having trouble sleeping.
Sure.
I was like... Yeah. Try this, you know? So yeah, she also has some like medical, prescribed experience with it, mm-hmm. from like pain relief that she has dealt with.
Yeah.
So she's not totally unfamiliar, but sure. Like, I wouldn't say that she herbally refreshes recreationally.
Mm, great.
So next, we're headed into these woods. And I say that they're woods, but really it's like a canopy. Mm-hmm. It's like a canopy of green, and like it's incredibly lush. And you can tell that it's by a water source because of how green it is.
And the wetlands are really peeking through the trees, or rather, you can see the wetlands through the trees. Here. It ends up being significantly cooler in these woods. And again, it is the thing that's, I think, shocked the both of us the most about Indiana Dunes and Indiana, the state park and the national park, was that they were just so green. Like, that was the thing that I just walked away thinking, gosh, this is such a green park for being quote unquote a sand park. There's clearly something about, you know, freshwater and plant life. It makes things very green, you know, obviously. That sounds, you know, like it's very common knowledge to think that, but here we're seeing just such a vibrancy of green in such a area where there is so much water. Mm-hmm.
And so much fresh water, specifically because Lake Michigan is a freshwater lake.
Yeah.
So that, and by freshwater, we mean not saltwater, like the ocean.
Yeah. This trail, as we're walking, is mostly flat, but there are some occasional hills here. I remember kind of feeling like it felt like kind of like a dirt bike path through the woods.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Like that kids had like carved out and like made some ramps.
Yeah. I remember thinking, like, you know how sometimes you can put on sunglasses that have that...
like a polarization.
Like a polarization on them. I was not wearing sunglasses with polarization on it, but I felt like looking in real life into this canopy felt like looking through something with a polarized lens just because it was so bright. Canopy hiking, right? Love it. So we eventually reach the juncture point that we need to turn left on, which is going to just basically keep us on the bottom half of this eight. And that takes us across the eight.
The figure eight that is the shape of the trail, not like the eight trail, like in Sand Dunes State Park.
Yeah. Correct. What I do remember at this moment is we were both in a bit of a mood at this moment because we were both on, I think we were feeding each other's diatribes because we were definitely diatribing about heteronormativity and how this world is made for hetero relationships and how hard it is to buy a house and how much easier it is to buy a house when you're in a hetero relationship, right?
Sure.
You know?
I think it's more of when you're just in a relationship.
No, yeah. But particularly a hetero relationship.
Sure.
Certainly.
I guess so, yeah.
We were...
I think we were just like, you know...
We were in our feels.
We were in the feels.
And about. Having sister moment.
Mm-hmm.
Having a sister moment, I should mm-hmm. say.
Welcome to the stage, sister moment.
Uh-huh.
After we make our way to the other side of the eight and, you know, continue to bitch our way along, we turn left again, and this links us back up with the spot where we came into the wood.
Did we see the dad and son again?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we mm-hmm. saw them again here, right? Mm-hmm. This was interesting.
Yeah, and I was just like, they're high.
I think they were this time.
They yeah. definitely were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were looking at the clock the whole time,
yeah.
and we were certainly looking at it now, and we were like, okay, we have to get back to the car, and so we just hoofed it.
Yeah.
Because we were like, we got to get back to the car so that we can make it on time for this thing.
Yeah.
For this guided tour that we didn't want to miss. So yes, our long strides and our gay pace,
mm-hmm.
you know, made it possible for us to get back the way we came off the trail and to the car in a flash.
With gams like these and my homosexuality, I can run anywhere at half the speed.
And with that, let's take our first break. Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. All right.
It's moving.
We're playing Montage Song.
Mm-hmm.
We actually haven't played this in a while.
Yeah, we haven't.
So
it's not like what we usually say.
Right.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. Mm-hmm. So this game is about like your life is a movie
mm-hmm.
and you have to pick a moment. We've played a version of this on an episode where we said, okay, this sort of prologue to your life,
mm-hmm.
what happens in the prologue and then what song is playing while the prologue is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and listen to all of our episodes and find that one if you want. I'm
Good
not
luck.
Sure which one it's in. But here is my offer to you.
Mm.
The moment is your first heartbreak.
Mm.
And I want you to choose the song and feel free to describe the moment if you would like. You can describe the moment and then choose the song that plays as the actor who's playing you like walks away from this moment.
Mm. Okay. I feel like I've talked about this before, like the heartbreak moment. And that's like in my early gay days, now that I'm like, you know, 1,000 years old, I had met someone via MySpace. So I just dated myself. I was going to school in Philadelphia. He lived back home. We started to chat. When I was home over the summer, we got together a few times. He was my first kiss. That was a dude. And he basically like tried to be like, I'm not good for you. Like, don't, like, he tried to talk me out of like wanting to be interested in him. And I later came to find out via MySpace it's because he was seeing somebody else. And so,
yes, I remember
talk
this.
About the disappointment and the darkness.
So was your first heartbreak moment like all by yourself in a room all by yourself? Like when you found out in MySpace?
No, I think I was in the computer lab at school, actually.
Oh, because, even better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that's not embarrassing. So I think the song is...
Lay a whisper on my pillow. Really? Leave the winter on the ground. Mm-hmm. Yep. I wake up lonely.
Yeah.
Pair of silence. Uh-huh. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. I'm obsessed with that song.
It's a great song.
Must have been love.
Yep.
But it's over now. Mm-hmm.
So that would be my that'd be my heartbreak song.
What a great song for that moment.
And it's just been downhill since then. So just another disappointment.
Another disappointment splashed across page six.
That's what my love life has been, is just a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, your card's come in. It's come in.
Sure. And how about you now that I've made it dour?
Well, I mean, I figured.
Yeah.
So, because you are the Dowager Countess, if there ever was one.
It's true.
Okay, my first heartbreak. Okay. Okay, here we go. I can't believe. Okay, I had an experience.
There were no women.
In my early gay days, right? Mm-hmm. I think my first heartbreak was like fourth grade with this girl that ended up becoming one of my best friends. But mm-hmm. this was my first like adult heartbreak. And of course, as a queer person and as a gay person, it was sort of like just have to like having your heart break publicly in front of everybody, but it's silent and to yourself in front of a room of all these other people.
Oh,
I had been
in the computer lab.
I was college. Not in the computer lab
looking
at college.
At MySpace.
No, it was in my early 20s. I was at a rehearsal and I had just met this person that was going to be a part of the show that I was working on. Mm-hmm. And he was so beautiful and so talented. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that was the phrase I used to myself. I am in love. Like I remember like I had met him like at a few rehearsals, and then I had to go to Mississippi. I think probably I went to Mississippi for some reason.
Okay.
And I remember just like pining for him.
Mm-hmm.
God, we're so dramatic. Love makes us so dramatic.
Oh, Ramon.
Pining for him.
Ramon.
And imagining like what our life would be like together, and mm-hmm. like excited to like, you know, like for him to come down and meet fam. Like, meanwhile, we've had maybe a couple of casual conversations. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you're a gay person who doesn't get to, you know, like date and figure out that part of yourself in high school and in college with everybody else while it's all messy and everybody's figuring it out, then it happens here in mm-hmm. your early 20s mm-hmm. or mid 20s or whenever.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next rehearsal I went to, I was so excited to see him, and we talked and blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, oh yeah, this is my girlfriend. And I just had to meet her in front of everybody else and like devastated and dying inside. Mm-hmm. And I think the song that would play for me is, I can't make you love me if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
That song.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're going to lean into the drama, mm-hmm. let's lean all the way in.
I can't make your heart feel
something that it won't. Right? Ugh, that song.
Deep in.
Ooh.
I forget the rest of the lyrics, but yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And that is montage song.
So where we needed to go was just across the main road, and the main road running through this area of Indiana Dunes is Route 12. So we literally just crossed Route 12 to the other side, mm-hmm. to the south side of Route 12,
mm-hmm.
and then it brought us to a parking lot at the end of that road, and that is where we were meeting for the trailhead for the Bailey Homestead tour.
We got out of the car. I think we might have even changed into sneakers, because this was described as a very light sort of experience, and we weren't going to be hiking traditionally. I don't believe either of us brought our bag, maybe just a water bottle with us. And a group of us gathered at Trailhead. We met a young couple who had a camera and a recording equipment for their YouTube channel. We exchanged some stickers with them. They were very sweet. And between them, there was another small family and us. And that was our tour group.
And then the tour guide arrived, and his name was Ranger Bill. And he was super lovely and super friendly and super knowledgeable. He shared with us that he was a part-time ranger and also a full-time agriculture teacher. center.
Mm-hmm. And I was so intrigued by that as having high school agriculture classes. But it makes mm-hmm. sense considering exactly where we were.
That's right. So the first leg of our tour was a walk on a trail for a bit. Now, typically on things like this, when you're moving on a trail and everybody's like lined up, like you're not getting any information from the tour guide at that point. We were just sort of moving to another spot before you stop. And that is what we were doing here. We did finally get to the homestead, mm-hmm. which is a giant home in the middle of this like open area,
yeah.
past some trails. Mm-hmm. There were a few other people around who were not on a tour,
yeah.
but who were just exploring.
Milling around, yeah.
Just milling around. And then there was us.
And you don't have to take a tour to get here. So no. this is not like a ticketed event. Once you enter into the field, there are actually a lot of different structures here within this open field. But yes, there is a large home.
The home is named for Honor Gratien Joseph Bailey de Messien.
White!
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This white fur trader who was one of the first white settlers to start developing the Calumet region, which is what this area is also known as. It served as a stopover for travelers and missionaries because, of course, we cannot have colonization without missionaries.
Right.
And Jesus. And was a stopover for those people traveling from Chicago to Detroit. It was optimally placed on these two trading trails. And it is now a national landmark.
We stood here and we had some time to kind of take all of this in while Ranger Bill was also kind of illuminating us to the history of the house and the structures that were there at the site. He also gave us some time to kind of meander and look at everything that was in this kind of open area of the Bailey.
There's definitely like the main house and then some structures to the side of it. There's sort of like a couple other things about and around, like a shed and like some smaller structures. Now, we could not go into the main house. And, you know, I found the design of the main house to be a little odd because mm-hmm. I guess I was expecting something that was had architecture that was a little more period.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, this was not.
Right. But I do feel like some of the other structures, like there was, I think there was a chapel, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. There were a few other like smaller home structures that were there. They felt a little bit more dated.
Those were more period. But yeah. this big house felt a little like could have also just been someone's house in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely had siding, bricks, stones. It also had gutters like for rain,
yeah.
you know. So also Ranger Bill mentioned that recently the Secretary of the Interior, Deborah Holland, had come to visit Indiana Dunes National Park and actually saw the Bailey Homestead.
When we were, you know, had time to kind of mill around here, we also were able to like chat with Bill and kind of get some more information about just the park in general and a little bit more about what it was like, you know, at the time. He did sort of give us an idea of what it would have been like to live in this area at the time. So he painted a portrait of, you know, historically how people would have lived at this time, which I feel like if you're going into a historical site is worth mentioning, especially if there's not
sure,
informational placards, context. You know.
After we left this area, it was time to move on to the next section of the tour, which was down a trail a little ways. So we have to all take a trail down and then we eventually end up at this elevated cemetery burial area.
Mm-hmm. Ranger Bill told us that this was the Bailey Cemetery and that there are quite a number of bodies buried in it. So Ranger Bill told us when we arrived that we were at the Bailey Cemetery. There are apparently a good deal of bodies that are buried in the cemetery. And it's weird because it is an elevated platform. You would think that there would be vaults in the walls or something like a mausoleum, but it's not. There was a giant cross in the center. It's very strange too, because apparently, things we learned that sometimes the neighbors would try to bury their dead here as well. And
apparently at the time the neighbors were Swedish. They were of Swedish descent.
Oh, okay. And that's a thing. bury your dead.
The Swedish thing comes up again later.
Oh, okay. So apparently they would try to bury their dead here. And this was like very much poo-pooed by Mrs. Bailey, who insisted that they stop. But apparently they didn't give a damn and they continued to do so anyway when she was out of town.
She was the reason why they built this like limestone cinder block structure mm-hmm. around this area. And like literally there's just like bodies in there,
mm-hmm.
just like tons of bones.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like talk that it might also be on top of indigenous burial ground, but there's no way of really knowing because some of the bones have been exhumed,
mm-hmm.
But they can't tell whose bones they are.
Sure.
So they've all been replaced there respectfully, but yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's no way to confirm that. We did walk around this, around the perimeter.
It's big. It's a big structure.
It's a really big structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was certainly eerie.
Yeah. It definitely felt like, I do remember Bill talking about like leading ghost tours here.
Ghosts.
Yeah, I think it was in the summer or closer. I think they do it a few times a year. And just imagining being out there at this time of night was not something I think any of us were particularly excited about, because it did feel very eerie. And I feel like it would be very eerie at night.
I agree. I don't know that I would want to go there at night. We were there right in the middle of the day. Now it was time to head to the next section of the Bailey Homestead tour, which involved a farm. We head back the way we came toward the main homestead. Then we turned left, and that brought us to Shellberg Farm.
So this was a preserved farmhouse that a Swedish family owned, and they had operated a farm here from 1890 to 1910.
It begs the question if these were the Swedish neighbors.
Oh, yeah. There right? we are. Yeah.
So it's a fully brick house with two floors. Walking up to the house, there were some garden beds and some fenced in areas with animals
yeah.
because it's still a working farm.
Yeah. There were some pigs and chickens.
That's right. The pigs were so funny because it was a hot day and yep. they were just like in the muddy water.
Yeah, like rolling around for sure. Pigging out. We did get to go inside the house. I feel like the ranger had to get a key. So we were able to go through a space that was not the front door. So we went through the back of the house and he, you know, talked a little bit about the house. We were really only able to walk in to the kitchen and then the living room area. There really wasn't anywhere else for us to go, but it did feel like a little bit more of a modern house than, again, I would have expected from, you know, the farm running till, you know, 1910. So yeah, I just was kind of, again, surprised at the feel of everything in there as well.
So from here, we head on to the final leg of the trail, which was heading back toward the trailhead. Something else that we also want to mention while on this tour is that Ranger Bill told us we had stopped in the middle of the woods while we were on a walk around this area, and he told us about this thing called a direction tree.
Mm-hmm. And so the direction tree is really interesting. It's a tree typically at the intersection of a trail or two trails. It looked like it was growing out of the ground and then immediately sort of curving down towards the earth and then back up to grow upward. So we had definitely seen trees like this, not just in Indiana Dunes, like in other spaces as well, and we'd always been curious about what those trees were and why they were growing like that. What he told us is that oftentimes indigenous people would pin the tree down to the earth to help provide a direction for basically a marker as far as which way to go next. So these are called direction trees, which I thought was such a cool thing.
And then they continue to grow like that the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we've definitely seen trees like that before on other trails.
Yeah.
And now I'm...
Now I'm making my ass out.
And now we notice them,
mm-hmm.
right? We notice them as direction mm-hmm. trees.
When we finished up at the Shellberg farm, Bill was like, you're welcome to walk back with us to the parking lot. We're going to follow this trail, but you can also cut across. There's fields that you can kind of walk through that'll take you right back towards the parking lot a little quicker, but you don't have to walk with us as a group anymore if you don't want. He said this to the entire group. And this is the point where you and I were like, okay, bye. I mean, the tour was lovely, but I do find like that, you know, when we talk about what sort of, you know, tour takers we are, I had also hit the moment where I was like, my wall is here for tours at the moment. So it was nice for us to be able to enjoy the tour. It was really informative. I think it's worth it to do for sure. But I think after having done how many trails at this point on this day already, like 4 or 5, like my wall was coming real hard. And there was still one other thing that we wanted to do on this very first day that we were in Indiana Dunes State and National Park.
And with that, let's take our second break. Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage...
Sailor Twift.
Mm-hmm.
God, I love a spoonerism.
Mm-hmm.
Sailor Twift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's in the canon of Sailor Moon. She is like the forgotten sailor.
Oh, I see.
I mean, all of those sailors...
she's of like the Sailor Moon universe.
Right. All those sailors were named after planets.
That's right.
So...
Twift.
The Twift planet.
The Twift planet.
I mean, I feel like Taylor Swift has a planet.
Oh, totally.
For sure.
She's like created her own...
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Planet on its own here.
So she's Sailor Twift.
Sailor Twift.
Mm-hmm.
And so does Sailor Twift only do Taylor Swift music or
that's
no?
That's a great question. I mean...
I would love for... Okay, here's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I think Sailor Twift is a little sci-fi and a little electronica and a little bit robotica.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does original music, but samples Taylor Swift music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In it. Mm-hmm. So it's like... always a reference to Taylor Swift, but it's still iconically themselves, Sailor Twift.
Sailor Twift, yeah. I feel like there's a very big influence of Japanese culture in Sailor Twift's...
I see it.
Her whole shtick. And I do feel like that's very important. And I feel like it works really well, especially with like her sampling and like what she's doing. So I feel like part of her merch is actually comic books or manga that are about her and her adventure. If we're going with a Sailor Moon type theme, I feel
that works really well. Yeah, yeah. She definitely, in the same way that Taylor Swift has built a universe with folklore, with Easter eggs, with like references, Sailor Twift does the same thing on their own and in their own way.
Yeah.
So Thaddeus and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Welcome to the stage, Sailor Twift.
All right, so we're now on the third portion of this day. We've done quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're on the third portion of this episode, but really this is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, part 6 of the day,
sure,
if we include the visitor center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
twas a full day.
Twas.
And wasn't even that late.
No.
No.
And we were now going to go do Mount Baldy.
Yeah.
Which is the largest dune in Indiana Dunes.
In the national park.
But in the national park.
Not the largest dune in the area.
Correct.
That's important. So, to distinguish.
Mm-hmm. We had to drive about 20 minutes to the other side of the park to get to Mount Baldy.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to sort of see the little like shops and little restaurants along the way here. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any time to trinket on this day.
No, we were dead
mostly
tired.
Because Mike said no.
Yep, just a disappointed dad over here all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you don't have the time or the money for that.
You don't need any of that.
Mm-mm.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Every time. Can you go in there? You don't need any of that.
And you don't. We park the car when we get in to... So first of all, this lot was... It was kind of wild because the dune is at... The foot of the dune is at the edge of the parking lot. Also, if you remember from a million episodes ago, because this is the third episode on the same day, it had rained when we had come into the Indiana Dunes area the night before. This parking lot felt like it was sort of flooded too. There was giant puddles throughout the parking lot. Clearly, it needed a little bit of a repave. But we basically are able to park right at the foot of the dune, which is very strange. It's like the dune is just encroaching into the parking lot, and NPS is like, well, you can't park in these spots anymore because the dune is taking it. So it was very, very odd.
So we walk from the car and we head toward the area where people can like get to the other side of Mount Baldy, because like there were a lot of dead trees growing out of the sand here. I took a lot of photos of this.
Oh, and who's going to have a coffee book now?
Uh-huh. Well, they can just be like little bonuses.
An addendum.
That go into yours. We saw these three younger rangers sitting in these lawn chairs over by the restrooms, and we went up to them. We were like, so what do you do to do Mount Baldy? And they were like, oh, you just like climb up and over it and get to the beach. That's what you do.
Well, you're not really climbing over Mount Baldy. Your Mount Baldy is like, they're like, don't climb it because you could fall into it. Like,
well, yeah, but
you're going up a hill
section. Yeah. That is a hill. That is not a like
dune proper, I would say.
Well, no, that section is not necessarily like a proper dune, but yeah, it's part of Mount Baldy.
Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, just
the marked trail is
up and
we'll
over that. And mm-hmm. then that'll bring you to the other side of Mount mm-hmm, Baldy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay. So we headed over that way. This was a bit of a steep grunt.
Yeah.
To get up this section. Essentially, we have to get up over and then down the other side.
And the wild thing is that this is a beach for people. So we were watching people climb up with us and people coming back that had like, here's a cooler that I'm carrying. Here's all this beach gear. It was kind of a strange thing. I'm like, I think I turned to you and I was like, I'm so glad that we're not doing that right now.
For real.
I think we were also tired, but this is, and I do remember it being described as quite a grunt to kind of get onto the beach and then up to, you know, where you needed to go.
And it certainly was. Mm-hmm. We grunted our way up. We felt it the whole way. And then we got to this area that sort of was like a lookout area.
Yeah.
Where we could see all of the beach and we could see Lake Michigan and we could see Chicago over to one side and we could see the
factories
over on the other. Yeah. But there we were also surrounded by trees and it was very tropical here.
Yeah.
Felt a little rainforest.
It was
almost
wild. Very strange.
Yes.
And basically, in order to get to the beach, you have to go down a steep hill. So we're like, okay. Well, as we were climbing up the initial hill, we're like, well, this will be easy going back down. And then we get to the beach and it's like, damn it.
I know.
So we're like, are we going to go down there? And we both decided to.
Yeah. We were like, we've made it all the way here. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
So, yes, we go down to the beach and then we do lovely beach things. We stroll along the beach. We put our feet in the water. Mm-hmm. We sit on the sand. We look to the left and see Chicago, which is an excellent view of Chicago from right there. And then over to the right, we could
just
see
factories, wild
factories,
so strange.
And then a lot of people just here having a beach day.
Yeah, I mean, it was warm, like
hot summer day.
Yeah, I put my feet in the water and like enjoyed the hell out of it. It was beautiful. I mean, people were like truly swimming, like here. This was clearly like beach spot. I was like, damn, I wish we had brought like towels. This would have been like such a nice respite for the end of the day, but we didn't have a ton of time. And I think we were both like, we're done. We wanted to sit for a little bit and then just enjoy. And we totally did. It was so nice to just know that this was the last thing we were doing and to be able to take it all in. And it was a beautiful day to be able to do that.
So after spending a lovely moment here, we collected ourselves again and said, all right, we're going to head back. And then we had to go up, over, and down that section of, you know, trail again in order to get back to the parking lot. Uh-huh. We said hello again to the three young rangers.
And you're like, I want to give them
rangers.
Yeah, thank you.
Aye, aye, aye. That's right.
You were like, let's give them stickers. And because this is what something we were like using as our calling cards.
Or checks. As business cards.
Checks.
Checks. Instead of business cards, we were just giving stickers if we ended up engaging with somebody. Yeah. We chatted with them, and then we gave them some stickers.
Mm-hmm. And after like having a lovely little chat and talking about what we had done that day and what we had planned to do the next day, we hightailed our way back to the car, drove on back to the Airbnb, and relaxed the heck out of our evening.
Okay, so let's put these items on the Karen Stone scale.
Great.
Let's start with the bog trail.
The bog trail is like a 3 for me. It wasn't super difficult, but there was a little bit of elevation gain and loss on the trail. It wasn't just flat. So I can't just give it like a 1 or a 2. It's definitely a 3 for me.
It's a 3 for me as well, because there was a lot of it that was dirt path, but it wasn't like a totally flat dirt path.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah. 6 out of 20 Karen Stones.
Great. The Bailey Homestead.
The trails on the Bailey Homestead, I would give that a 2 because those were really flat and that was pretty even earth and grass like trails. So I'm going to give it a 2.
That's what I was thinking too. Great. So a 4 out of 20.
Great.
On the Karen Stone scale.
Now, this section of Mount Baldy that we had to go up and over, not very long.
No, but annoying and
but
steep.
Annoying.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 4.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. So in our, you know, mashup here.
Let's be real. We're not usually that far away from each other.
We aren't voting
for Karen Stone.
Usually it's like, you know, one of us is a number off or two of one another. So all right. So yeah. 8 out of 20. And with that, let's end this episode with some Jeopardy style trivia.
All right, who would like to start?
I can start.
Great. Go for it.
I was inspired by the fact that we were in the prairie, like in the prairie landscape here.
Please tell me you have an entire category dedicated to Laura Ingalls Wilder.
No.
Because I would probably not do that well, but I would get very excited. I did read all of her books as a child.
So I was thinking about the prairie and I was thinking what comes to mind first, and it's Prairie Home Companion is the first thing that pops into my head.
Ah.
But I don't really know much about Prairie Home Companion. So here's what I did. This game is called Prairie Home Companion Synonyms. So I'm going to describe, the clue will be 3 descriptors, all of which are synonyms for the words prairie, home, and companion.
I'm ready.
And you need to come up with the new title for this NPR show.
Got it. I'm ready for this.
All right. For 100. An important marshy space, a small rental dwelling, the name for a friend in Spanish.
What is a wetlands flat compadre?
I'll take it. I'll take it. I was looking for wetland apartment amigo.
Oh, okay. Great. Great.
Great. Great. For 200, a grassy plain in a subtropical region whose name also shares that of a Georgia city. An owned space that most likely has a homeowners association.
Association.
That was some Moira Rose if I ever did.
Association. I'm a part of the Homeowners Association, David. Alexis, I can't meet with you now because I'm having my convening of the Homeowners Association.
All right. A grassy plain in a subtropical region that also shares the name with the Georgia city, an owned space that most likely has a homeowners association, and a word for friend that sounds like it's what you throw in the water to attract sharks.
What is a Savannah house bait?
No. What is a Savannah condo chum?
Oh, chum.
Yeah.
Condo.
Yeah. A house doesn't usually have a homeowners association.
Not all. Yes, there are. I know many people who own homes and there's a homeowners association.
They're in a development, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well,
Okay.
All right. Well, sorry.
Okay.
For 300, a flat raised landmass of the Southwest U.S., a cozy woodland dwelling with a thatched roof, and someone who would fight beside you in battle.
So, is it a mesa cabin partner.
Who was someone that would fight beside you in battle?
Like your if fellow England soldier.
And France.
Okay. So your
cabins usually have thatched roofs.
Then is it a Mesa Cottage ally?
There you go. How to help you along.
Great.
All right, for 400, an arid landscape with very little rainfall, a log structure usually found in the woods, how I might describe a friend or ally in Russia.
Well, I know it's a desert cabin and I don't know the Russian word.
What is comrade?
Oh, comrade.
What okay. is a desert cabin comrade? And lastly, for 500, a large and sudden elevation of the earth, which abruptly rises, oftentimes to points and ridges, a residence fit for a king, and how Australians describe their friends.
What is a mountain castle mate?
I'll take it. Mountain palace or mountain castle mate.
Great.
And that is prairie home companion.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So since the title of this episode is called Bog, Bailey, and Baldy, mm-hmm. this entire category of Jeopardy is adjective, noun, verb.
Great.
But they all start with B's.
Oh, okay.
So it's all B so words.
Strap in.
Okay. For 100. A shy Hollywood starlet of family fame. And I'm going to say that again. A shy Hollywood starlet of family fame whilst window shopping.
What is a bashful Barrymore browsing?
That's right. Mm-hmm. For 200, a casual and indifferent classical dancer with a side bend in their knee.
What is a blasé ballerina bowing? Bowing?
Not that. What is a blithe
okay.
ballerina beveling?
Beveling. Got it.
Yeah. You know when you stand and then sort of like kick your knee in a little bit? Mm-hmm. You do that all the time. It's beveling. For 300, mm-hmm. pants with way too much fabric blowing like a flag in the wind.
Were there bell bottoms billowing boldly?
No, we were looking for baggy britches billowing.
Great.
Okay.
Bell bottoms billowing would have worked.
Bell bottoms billowing works. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if they were braggy. Baggy.
Baggy.
Braggy and baggy.
And baggy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Baggy and braggy bell bottoms mm-hmm. billowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It works too. Mm-hmm. Okay. For 400, vampiric male livestock running directly toward you.
What is blood sucking bovines brampeding?
Okay. You can get there. Heading straight toward you, full speed. What's the word we...
Bull rushing. Boulder dashing.
Maybe like it gets its term from an actual noun that is like wooden and cylindrical and when turned on its side...
Barreling.
There we go. Bloodthirsty. I would have also accepted bloodthirsty bulls barreling. Okay, and for 500...
But I used my $10 words.
You did. Bovines. Mm-hmm. Okay, for 500, a strong and muscular pastry chef preparing to make bagels.
What is a buff baker boiling?
I will totally accept that. Mm-hmm. I would have also accepted a brawny baker boiling.
Great. We had a three. Our categories were like in that they were all things of threes.
In threes. Look at that.
Mm-hmm. By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes.
So, do you know what Shakespeare play that was from?
It's from Macbeth, girl. Honey, right. You think you ain't know nothing? It was those three witches.
That's mm-hmm. right. Of all the Shakespeare plays, I know you would know.
Mm-hmm.
It would be Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're a little witch, girl.
Honey, welcome to my life.
That's right. Speaking of that, this has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to witch early and witch often. Witches are always out there.
I like how this took a weird turn at the
end. It did.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Witch McCoy.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at gaze@thenationalparks. To contact us, email us at gaze@thenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gaze@thenationalparks.com. That's gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and our website, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger with Sean's Theos on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.